This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. Good morning. It's been a busy week for big announcements by lawmakers. Governor Walker unveiled controversial budget plans for the UW system and a proposed Milwaukee basketball arena. And several GOP legislators announced a proposal they say would stimulate growth in challenged parts of the state's largest city.
Meanwhile, debate continues over two contentious plans that would make fundamental changes in the state Supreme Court. One would alter the process for choosing the Chief Justice. The other would create an upper age limit for justices. Chad Oldfather is a law professor at Marquette University Law School, and he joins us now to share some perspective on both issues. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
In Wisconsin, what distinguishes the Chief Justice from the other members of the state Supreme Court?
Well, in the public sense, I think the justice most often would appear as first among equals, presiding at the public sessions of the court. There's considerably more that goes on behind the scenes. The Constitution designates the Chief Justice as the administrative head of the judicial branch, which means that there are scores of additional responsibilities, including things like budgeting, sometimes staffing-related issues, not only with respect to judges but with respect to other court personnel. So it's actually quite a substantial job.
When it comes to whether the court swings one way or another, ideologically, though, the notion of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court doesn't necessarily – he or she doesn't have any more sway necessarily as any other member of the court, right?
That's correct. It's because it's not like the model of the U.S. Supreme Court where the Chief Justice has responsibility for assigning who writes opinions in particular cases. That system works differently at the state level. So in terms of the most public aspect of the court's work, I think it's fair to say the Chief Justice really does not have a role that would come across as partisan. Now, in the administrative role, there may be aspects that could be influenced in a partisan sort of sense, emphasizing different sorts of programs, public awareness aspects, things like that.
So from a practical standpoint, if the decisions are made by a body of people, what difference does it make who the Chief Justice is and how he or she is chosen?
I think from the perspective, again, of the most visible aspects of the court's work, there's not going to be that much apparent to the public that is different. The Chief Justice is, in that respect, very much first among equals. She only has one vote. She does not have the authority to assign opinions to her colleagues in ways that can shape the way they're written. So in most respects, in terms of the court's core mission of deciding cases, the Chief Justice really does not meaningfully have a different role from her colleagues.
So how then do you interpret the legislation that would change how the Chief Justice is chosen?
Well, there are two interpretations of it. The proponents of the measure are offering it up as a good government proposal, the suggestion being that the Chief Justice position does have important responsibilities, that assigning those responsibilities on the basis of seniority on the court is in their mind not an appropriate way to do it, that it should be left to the other justices to make the decision who among them is most suited for that position. The response to that, the arguments that the Democrats are offering up right now, are not so much against it as a good government measure, but rather simply suggesting that that's not what's really going on here, but that what is instead going on is that the Chief Justice, who has been the Chief Justice, who has been on the court for a very long time, has developed a reputation as a very strong liberal voice on the court, and that what is being done here is the settling of political scores.
Do you see – I mean, is it emblematic of a larger politicization of the judicial system?
I think it's very much emblematic of that, and I think the reasons to be opposed to this, if one is inclined to be opposed, are – not so much that it is a bad idea in an abstract sense. I think, in fact, choosing the chief based on seniority might be the third best way of doing it in an abstract sense. But rather that at this particular moment in the court's history where Wisconsin politics have become very much a team sport, an us versus them affair. The Supreme Court has taken on that character as well. The Supreme Court has had all sorts of difficulties in recent years. And so the concern would be that this sort of effort would simply amplify that and tend to portray the court in the public's eye, as well as perhaps in the justices' own eyes, as a part of these partisan battles rather than apart from them.
You said in an abstract sense it might be the third best way of choosing a chief justice. What are the other – I mean, obviously, you know, another way is to have the court decide among – the justices decide among themselves who ought to be chief justice. So what about other ways? For example, the idea of the chief executive making the appointment, as goes on in at the federal level.
Right. And that certainly is the other model that is – followed in other states. Minnesota, for example, is a state in which the chief justice is a distinct position and is either appointed by the governor in the event of a vacancy during the middle of a term or and is then subsequently reelected or subject to reelection as a distinct position. So that would be the primary alternative, which does parallel the federal model.
For the change to happen, it would require a statewide referendum and presumably a special election this spring. What sort of interest is the general public likely to have in an issue like this?
Well, the concern, of course, is that spring elections tend to be low turnout elections generally. There is another Supreme Court race on the April ballot. Historically, though, turnout in those elections is much lower than in the November elections. And so another issue that has been raised by the Democrats in the legislature is that this is not the sort of thing that's appropriate to put on an April ballot simply because we'll be getting a much smaller slice of the public weighing in on it.
Does this maneuver say something about the current state of checks and balances in the system?
I think it does. I think that this is certainly an effort by the political branches, the governor, and more in this case, the legislature, to attempt to discipline, rein in, check the judicial branch. So in the sense that this is an instance of the legislature attempting to check the judicial branch, it's not the sort of thing that is historically unprecedented. In fact, if we want to go back to the very beginning of the country, everyone, of course, is at least vaguely familiar with the case of Marbury versus Madison, right, which is most often taught as establishing the U.S. Supreme Court's ability to review acts of the legislature and executive for constitutionality. That case took place in the very first transition of power from one party to another in American history. It was a very, very politically charged time, and in fact, so much so that even though the events giving rise to that case took place in 1801 when the transition from the Adams administration to the Jefferson administration took place, the case itself wasn't decided until 1803. Because Congress canceled the 1802 term of the United States Supreme Court for entirely political reasons. The so-called switch in time that saved the nine at the time of the New Deal is another instance where you've got President Roosevelt, who is greatly dissatisfied with the Supreme Court continually striking down aspects of the New Deal. And so what he says is, I think we ought to increase the size of the Supreme Court to up to 15 justices, at which he said – was entirely motivated by efficiency concerns, but which everyone understood was really about giving him the ability to appoint justices who would vote to uphold his legislation. So in a historical sense, this sort of thing is not new. That doesn't mean it's not distasteful. It's just not unfamiliar.
Oh, and at the same time, there is another piece of legislation which has not yet, if I'm understanding correctly, has not yet been introduced, but would have a fairly direct and fairly immediate impact on people serving on the Wisconsin Supreme Court now, and that is an effort to enforce a retirement age on justices.
That's correct. The Wisconsin Constitution was amended in 1977 to provide for a retirement age for justices on the Supreme Court. And the provision says the legislature shall enact such a retirement age, which shall not be less than 70. And for whatever reason, that has not happened in the intervening time. There is currently being proposed, it has not yet been introduced, a bill that would place that retirement age at 75. That would certainly impact the Chief Justice, who is 81. It would also impact several of the other justices on the court, either immediately or in the fairly short term.
Is there a compelling reason to enforce a retirement age on Supreme Court justices?
I suppose my response to that would be to say that if we believe in judicial elections, if we believe that the people of the state are capable of assessing candidates for the Supreme Court and deciding which one is the most qualified, we certainly ought to be comfortable with the idea that they can take into account the age of the candidates, both at the time they're running and at the time their term would come to an end. So I tend to think that that is inconsistent with the idea of judicial elections in a fundamental way.
Do we have any idea why a constitutional amendment was passed back in the 1970s directly aimed at enforcing this and then nothing ever happened, you know, sort of immediately thereafter?
I do not have an idea.
Before either of our time. Well, Chad Oldfather, thank you so much for helping shed some light on both of these pieces of legislation.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Chad Oldfather is a professor at Marquette University Law School whose specialties include state judiciaries.
Coming up next, an art and architecture critic examines what he thinks went wrong with two Milwaukee public projects. That's coming along when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.